Alvin and the Chipmunks end their reign of TV terror. Leonardo DiCaprio commits suicide, and Sacha Baron Cohen pulls some very nice pranks in Borat this week in 302010. 302010, here we go again. Analyzing decades, sitting with our friends, those were different days. And there's so much to say. Welcome, everybody, to another 302010, a weekly look back at what happened 30 years ago, 1986, 20 years ago, 1996,
10 years ago,
2006, going week by week in chronological order. This is the week of October 28th through November 3rd. Mm-hmm. I'm one of your hosts, Brett. I tried.
I am Chris Antista, and I am no shit really excited to talk about Borat.
I'm excited
tired
to tell you how
nonsense.
Many times I've seen it.
Tired of this nonsense.
A day very nice run.
And I am Diana Michael's wife.
But yeah, we begin every. Wow, my notes. I misspelled it and put 1984.
Ooh, let's go. Ooh. Let's go way back.
Big mistake. Yeah, every week.
We're a portal into the past
the Apple
of that
something.
Specific week we're living in right now. Yes.
Yeah. So this episode, we post new episodes every Thursday on 302010.net, and you
which
can
is lasertimepodcast.com in disguise.
Yes, but don't just go to 302010.
Filter it out with a bunch. We filter out all the wonderful videos and articles to show you just 302010.
Yeah, and as always, the show is supported by Patreon, patreon.com/lasertime, where you can help the show and help all of our other satellite shows.
Brought to you in part
by
the Wondery Network, the wonderful, wonderful Wondery Network. Wondery.com.
Wondery.com/, if you want to go there, 302010. There's 7,000 ways you can interact with
the
show.
We never do this many plugs, so I don't mind stacking them all at the top.
But we'll begin October 28th through November 3rd. We're in 1986. We always begin with movies, unless there was news. But no one won a Nobel Prize this week. Mm-hmm. And no balloons descended on, what town was that?
Cleveland. Yeah.
So we're into movies. Crocodile Dundee is still number one. Crikey.
Blimey.
Which is will be number one until the end of November.
So I'm learning a ton of dollary dues at the
So many
raking the dollary dues.
300 American dollars, which is like $900 million dollary dues.
300 It's the second highest grossing movie behind Top Gun. I still can't believe how much that movie costs compared to how much it made.
Yeah, profits have yet to go down the drain counterclockwise.
Yeah. We love our stats here. We just did a laser time about horror stats, but I love adjusting things for inflation, and I've always wanted to figure out what is actually the most profitable movie of all time, and I think Crocodile Dundee has to be up there.
I'm pretty sure Blair Witch is going to be
Blair
number
Witch,
one.
Blair Witch, Clerks probably is up there. Yeah, yeah. Night of the Living Dead.
That's true.
Before it fell in the public domain. Anyway, 1986, October.
But yeah, it will be number one, Crocodile Dundee, until the end of the month, November. And it will be bumped by what will become the number five grossing movie of the year, despite releasing at the end of November.
Wow.
Whoa.
So that's a sign of how much money that movie's going to make.
A big incoming.
And it's one we've all seen.
Yay!
Anyway, other movies that did come out this week. Mm-hmm. Let's Get Harry?
I've never heard of it, but a guy named Harry is kidnapped in Colombia, and his buddies go on a macho Reagan-esque mission to rescue them when the military
so it's
fails
not like
them.
Your biopic, Chris. Let's Get Harry.
No, which funny thing is, Tom Wilson, Biff, is in the movie.
Wow.
And he's also in 2009's Let's Get Harry, as you just said it, to mock my body. To body shame me in front of everybody, Dave.
It's not your body, it's your body hair.
It's on my body, Dave.
But it's Mark Harmon.
Okay.
Gary Busey, Robert Duvall. Director is Stuart Rosenberg, who used, and I didn't know this, I'm sure everyone also knows this but me, but I don't follow movies as a thing, but Stuart Rosenberg directed, but used the famous pseudonym Alan Smithy.
That's not good. That's a bad sign.
When a director wants to withdraw his name from the film. David Lynch tried to do it with Dune.
It's a pseudonym that most directors will use when they realize this is terrible.
Yeah.
But famous cases I wrote down when a director used their real name in the theatrical version, but then when it's edited for TV or for airplanes, or for other showings, Dune had David Lynch taken off of it.
Mm-hmm. Dune had a director's cut DVD come out to Alan Smithy. They hadn't figured out, call it a producer's cut, call it an unrated, whatever. Yeah, no.
Meet Joe Black. did it as well?
Yeah, I think Alien. David Fincher wanted to do it with Alien 3.
Oh, wow.
A movie that had a set before it had a script.
God. And then my favorite one, because when I saw this as a list, I'm like, wait, I've seen this. How could this be true? The Guardian.
Guardian.
Not the 2006, which I did see, strangely, because of a flight. But The Guardian is a horror movie I saw as probably 13, 12, about, I think, a spirit from the forest that kidnaps babies. And the movie ends with people cutting down a tree that is filled with babies. So imagine chainsaw cutting into a tree that is spewing blood everywhere.
Oh.
And I saw this as we were leaving to go camping. And it burned into my brain forever. But thank you, Alan Smithy, for that movie.
Ooh.
Anyway, we do have a trailer here for Let's Get Hairy.
It's dumb.
Whatever this turns out to be.
Who is behind you? You let Harry go or you're dust.
Butthead.
Whoa!
maybe they'll say Let's Get Hairy.
Let's do it.
An adventure about the hero in all of us.
What?
Jesus Christ. No, it's
Let's
not.
Get Hairy.
It has the name of the movie along the bottom in, like, the most basic-ass Let's Get Hairy font. Anyway.
I've never heard of this. It looks kind of fun.
Something like McBain's Let's Get Silly.
But the other movie that Diana put in the last minute.
The Mission.
The Mission. I actually just rewatched this because I remember I saw it many, many years ago because it was good. I believe it's a Best Picture nominee this year.
Mm-hmm.
Did Robert De Niro, Jeremy Irons, and Liam Neeson ever make a movie together? In fact, they did.
Wow.
Yes. It's about, like, Brazil, I guess it is now, in, like, the 1600s.
Soviet Union, Brazil.
And Jeremy Irons is a priest, and he wants to build a mission for the natives and bring him Jeebus. And Robert De Niro is, like, a slaver. I mean, he's literally catching people to sell him with slaves, and then he's got problems with his brothers, Aidan Quinn, who looks like a baby. And then he, like, joins up with the mission, and it's like, should we fight against the Spanish or the Portuguese or whatever? And it's pretty good. It has some gorgeous scenery and a really good Ennio Morricone score.
So I've never seen the movie, but my girlfriend's father drives an ancient, like, 1989 Toyota with a tape deck. The Mission soundtrack has never left his tape deck since I've been dating her, and I'm very familiar with the soundtrack. I haven't seen a single frame of the film.
Wow.
It's good. Compared to Let's Get Hairy, it'd be my recommend for this, but you know, it's good. It's directed by Roland Joffe, who has had, like, the worst career. Like, he did The Killing Fields, and then he did this. And then he did not really anything else. And then he did The Scarlet Letter with Demi Moore, which is so...
It was hot trash, right?
So, so bad. It exists just to fuck with high school students who don't want to read the book.
Yeah. I remember trying to do that instead and being like, really?
So...
You'll get caught. Don't do that,
so
kids.
Bad.
So in the third act, when she becomes a werewolf, should not have written this down.
Oh, God, it's so, so stupid. But yeah, The Mission's okay. I always have a problem with, like, I guess they sort of handle it. And, like, I'm watching this movie and I'm thinking, like, oh, we're going to bring Christianity to the natives. The natives are going to be so happy. It's like, what are they getting out of this?
Yeah, I don't get it. They'll be saved.
But,
I mean,
like, a lot of time they're like,
as a concept, because I'm just as confused as you are. My cousins go off on missions all the time and, like, this isn't going to work.
But it's like they're kind of making the argument it's not about saving their souls, but it's about, like, the mission is a safe place. They can hide here so slavers can't get them. I'm still like, but what are they? I guess, are you toning down the religious thing for what exactly? And then, like, it does show the Catholic Church as being a hierarchical, political type thing where, like, a bishop or somebody shows up and he gets to sit up on, like, a stage and listen to everyone make their arguments and make these big proclamations. And you're like, dude, fuck you.
I know the cover of the tape has Jeremy Irons holding a sword.
Yeah.
So, Christianity.
So, the Dungeons & Dragons movie, basically.
Oh, God.
And we've offended people again. Apologies, people.
Yeah. De Niro was really good in it. And, like, his sort of spiritual journey was really well done, I thought.
Moving into TV, we begin on October 28th, the TV movie, Dave, Manhunt for Claude Dallas.
Yes, which is
kind of notable in that it's got a pretty stellar cast. It's yet another TV movie based on a true story of a mountain man who killed two game wardens in Idaho. But yeah, the cast is the special part of this. It features Rip Torn and Brent Spiner, as well as the first ever film featuring Annette Bening.
Hey.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, she's young.
Yeah.
Well, compared to Warren Beatty.
That's true. Woo, SF State's finest.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did not know.
Yeah, she ended Warren Beatty's reign of terror. Wow. She's a national hero.
But a few other TV things of note this week. I guess you put this down, Diana. St. Elsewhere had a guest star, Will Wheaton.
Yeah, St. Elsewhere, the hospital drama, had an episode where Will Wheaton's Doogie Howser before there's Doogie Howser. He's a 14-year-old med student.
Wow.
But Justin, now we know that didn't exist, right?
What? Oh, yeah.
St. Elsewhere ends. That's the show that ends with the being a dream in an autistic boy's head looking at a snow globe.
Yeah.
So nothing that happens on the, which is remarkable at all because it never happened.
Yeah, but it's like, man, poor Will Wheaton. I mean, besides that Stand By Me just came out, mm-hmm. you know, what, a month, two ago. Mm-hmm. That's like, so he was always a precocious little kid and stuff. Yeah. This is like
how many years later would he be the smart little boy on the Enterprise?
A year later. So they'd probably, I don't know if he was cast yet as Wesley Crusher in Next Generation, Star Trek, but it would be airing a year from now in 87. So he's on his way to then not being in the rest of the show.
That a boy, Will.
On October 31st, the A-Team episode The Say Uncle Affair airs, which is notable because it's a semi-crossover between A-Team and The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Wow.
In season 5, Robert Vaughn, who was an actor on The Man from U.N.C.L.E., he became a regular on A-Team. The guest that week was David McCallum.
Ah.
So they had
other guy from Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah. Right. So it was kind of a crossover, but kind of not. And also of note in this episode, Murdoch impersonates Frank Sinatra. I just saw that in the episode description. I'm like, that sounds crazy. And
probably like current day Sinatra at that point. The guy with like the gray Lego hair.
Yeah, like the Piscopo Sinatra. Yeah. Also this week on the next day, November 1st, the final two episodes of Alvin and Chipmunk of 1986 airs. And I love both of these descriptions. There's a Chipmunk Vice, which, as you might have guessed, is a spoof of Miami Vice.
So Simon gets a coke problem.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Alvin is a detective who's looking for his prize baseball card. And the other episode that day, because they are two back-to-back, was Hooping It Up, where the Chipmunks and the Chipettes participate in a 1950s-themed scavenger hunt. Mm-hmm. Which, like, both are so, like, what I picture from the Chipmunks, is both 80 spoofs, but 1950s premises, where it's like, I gotta go to the sock hop.
You know me, I am currently a Chipmunks apologist. I find the new movies loathsome, but I'm sure my parents felt that way about my Chipmunks.
Yep.
Because they had their own Chipmunks too. Because they'll never go bad, because they're like Weird Al, and all they do is cover like songs at a high pitch. The show is very whimsical. The movie is amazing. The Chipmunk Adventure, I guess now is not the time. We can talk about it next year. Big animation strike.
Sure.
So Ross Bagdasarian managed to get every great Disney and Warner Brothers animator on Chipmunk Adventure. It looks great. It's a fantastic film. The music is amazing.
Having seen two out of the 12 Chipmunks movies, the live action ones, they're real bad.
Hey, look it.
Yeah, it's not good. Mm-hmm. So I really don't need to see any more Chipmunks things anytime soon.
I love the epiphany that, like, I hate these Chipmunks. But every generation kind of has their Chipmunks.
Yeah, I don't like, some kid goes to see it. Like, we were going with my niece, and it's like, I'm sure, yeah, she liked it just fine.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah, exactly.
It's fun, like, I hated, it's okay.
I hate my parents' Chipmunks, and I like this era of Chipmunks. They're great. He surfs in a bathtub.
Oh, yeah.
I do remember that.
And last but not least, there's an episode of Murder, She Wrote that has a great title, apparently.
I did not want to let anyone know what the title is. Oh. It's an episode of Murder, She Wrote, guest starring Marcia Wallace. So,
ooh,
Mrs. Krabappel,
Simpsons?
Yeah. And the title is Corned Beef and Carnage.
Nice.
I just love the title so much.
I mean, when you got Angela Lansbury and Mr.
Krabappel,
you got Carnage coming.
I'm just picturing my grandmother salivating over a printed TV guide. Oh, this looks lovely.
It is a great, great show.
Yep.
Moving into games, 1986. We didn't talk about, so one, finally NES games.
Yeah.
I think I inadvertently missed a handful of games like Balloon Fight and stuff that had come out over the year in 86 that were arcade conversions, like the original Mario Brothers, the original Balloon Fight, Which we covered. I did a video on our Laser Time YouTube channel about the NES Classic Edition that is about to come out when this episode posts. It's only a couple weeks away.
The thing about both of those games is you're done with them and you're bored of them in as quick a time as one of these segments is.
Oh, yeah. I love the original Mario Brothers. I love, like, it's fun. It's just really short.
It's nice when it's an extra on, like, Super Mario Advance or whatever.
Exactly. But NES games, so this is a where the dates are hard to really verify, but this kind of makes sense in a way. Mm-hmm. Bandai just dropped three games in a row.
So weird.
Which, in one hand, you're like, what? But the NES was heating up and hadn't full-blown, like, exploded yet because Mario 2, Zelda 2 aren't out yet. So, like, that's around the time when this thing really, you know, shifts
They probably
gears.
Have these things ready to go, and it's more cost-efficient, adjusted with the risk of, like, the video game market was dead. They had these three games ready to go, so, like, why not just launch all three at the same time? It seems silly now, but...
Yeah, the NES was rebuilding from a pretty notable crash in the 80s after the Atari 2600 and numerous other, I think, you know... I don't... man, that's all I had. My sister had one. She's 7 years older, so she had the 2600.
Dude, Atari scorched the earth so bad. Yeah. I never saw one until people started playing the NES. Like, people had shelved them and put them away.
Yeah, we had the wood paneling ass 2600. That it wasn't so much my sister's. It was like the family one hooked up to a giant radiation spewing television. but anyway, three games for the NES came out. Ninja Kid, which was based on a manga in Japan, which one of those things, a big surprise.
I played a lot of weird.
Yeah, and I remember playing this and it made no sense at all to me as a kid.
It's like they're. It's technically a side scroll, sort of, but like the same, if you go just all through it, like
there's like a weird overworld map, and then you occasionally end up bumping into like, oh, something happened, and then I'm riding a magic carpet evading ninja stars.
It usually involves like you have to kill 20 of these things or 10 of these things, but the stages kind of just wrap around, so you'll just be running around like, where do I go? What do I do? How many things do I have to kill? I don't know.
Yeah, it's so much. I don't know. And the music like drove me nuts because. It's like, I don't know.
It's one of those things where I was like, oh, I played this so much. I think I love the music. Okay. Then I realized there's one song and it's just like over and over and over and over and over.
You know, it's not popular when there is apparently no upload of the music. But let's see if there's a title screen. Which is fine.
Not racist. Not racist.
Hey, they did it. That's not bad. I take it all back. But that game made no sense to me. Anyway, also Chubby Cherub.
Jesus.
About a little angel boy.
That
who,
made it over here with Nintendo's
bounces around.
Anti-religious iconography.
Hey, Cherub, it's just cute.
I guess so.
That's like Hallmark Valentine's Day, man.
All right.
And then Muscle. Wrestling game based on the toys, which if you missed the Muscle craze, Muscle Men acronym, I think, for muscle. But
It's still popular in Japan.
Yeah, like pink muscular dudes. Mm-hmm. In different poses who are grotesque and silly and weird, but like they were muscle men, and this was a wrestling game that came out after the NES Pro Wrestling game, which again is one that I missed some point in 86, but that had like what King Korn Karn and Starman,
Amazon.
King Slender, and
the
Giant
Puma.
Oh,
is that
Puma.
Where A Winner Is You comes from?
A Winner Is You.
So this may surprise you. I've not played this wrestling game at all.
So, I remember playing it with a friend, but the muscle is borderline like...
it looks so bad.
It is clumsy looking and hallucination like city. It just like it's one of those things where like, how many colors can we use? Put them all on the screen.
Yeah.
I don't care.
But the thing about muscle is they're little fleshy action figures.
Yeah.
And they're kind of detailed and cool.
Yeah.
Like those were fun to play with. Meanwhile, the game is just like two nondescript like
it's
chunks of pixels.
That
like,
ring
is
like 100 yards wide compared to the size of the little guys.
They gotta have
so
a
it's just
to...
a big white expanse.
They gotta have room to move.
I mean, they can't properly put the guy with the butthole mouth on in the game. And I ain't playing from muscle.
This is it. So
what the hell?
So that's just the overworld music, which plays like. On an indefinite loop forever, and it's super boring. And I remember just walking around like, what am I supposed to do? And then you interact with something on the map, and then you go into an instance. Challenge of Shangri-La. And you shoot ninja stars out of your head with no animation.
A guy playing a guitar.
wow, it is a demon playing a guitar. Anyway, three NES games.
I think we have to stream this game now.
Not I have like weird stress memories of this. Just like feeling like, am I an alien? Like, is this the trick where, like, humans like this?
It's one of these games that, like...
And why am I just baffled by everything about this game?
Even with the aid of the Game Genie, like, I could never, ever beat this game. Because I didn't know how to. It was too complicated.
And I bet
weird.
If I played it now, it would either be insanely difficult, and I'll be like, wow, I was right. Yeah. Super right. In fact, it's worse than I remember. Or... This was dead simple, and I was trying too hard like to make it make sense in my head as a little kid. Anyway, NES games are finally coming, guys. We're going to have some fun stuff, and that kind of marks the beginning of like a lot of great NES games. And if this is somehow your first episode, welcome. But we talked about the Sega Master System recently launching in America as well, just a few months ago, or a few weeks ago, I think, at this point. Music taking us out of the 80s. 1986, the Commodores, strangely enough, have an album, United, Repossessed.
This is right before they break up.
And then also Repossessed by Kris Kristofferson, who is one of those people who shows up in every era of our shows.
I just saw him a few weeks ago.
Amazing.
After the Commodores, Kool and the Gang also had an album out this week called Forever.
70s were not over yet.
And as well as Elton John's least favorite album called Leather Jackets.
Oh, that's a bad one.
And he attributes it to him being mega coked up like the whole time. And just like,
you can say that about multiple decades.
But like to the point where he couldn't Elton John.
Elton John was too coked up.
Couldn't get a good album out. And it's like, but every song is so good.
The guy dressed like Donald Duck banging on a piano for 4 hours. Like, he was too coked up to do this.
He's got coke dust all over his glasses.
I think there's an anecdote where people recording with him. I think it was on the wiki or an interview somewhere. He's like, I came out. There's like visible cocaine on my face. Let's do it.
That's when it's like I go to Goodwill and dig through albums a lot. And it's like it's the first time I saw that. I'm just digging through. And I'm like, every now and then I find like Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. Great album. And then all of a sudden I see this. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Because he's, he looks like, it's like tough sort of biker thing, but obviously the leather connotations and stuff, and just
Freddie Mercury
like
tough.
Like, are you do you think that you're selling this to us, Elton John, or what? Oh, turns out he was just drugged out of his mind. Okay, makes sense now.
As well as Bad Company's Fame and Fortune. And Bad Company, I think anyone would know, I think, is Feel Like Making Love.
Thank you, I just learned this.
Also John Lennon. His second posthumous album came out this week, Men Love Avenue.
Don't think I've ever heard that one.
And then Roxette, Pearls of Wisdom, debut album from Roxette, which includes the song Goodbye to You, which I mostly remember from Beavis and Butthead watching it, calling it Goodbye to Pooh.
Goodbye to Pooh.
But I do remember Goodbye to You as a song. And the only reason I'm not playing that to take us out is Timbuk 3. Greetings from Timbuk 3, a.k.a. Future's So Bright, I Gotta Wear Shades, came out this week. So we'll head out with Timbuk 3's hit single. And when we come back this same week in 1996. I got a job waiting for my graduation. $50,000 a year, I'll buy a lot of beer. Things are going great, and they're only getting better. I'm doing all right, getting good grades. The future's so bright.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. Your stupid Illbleed stream, which has the King most the bizarre comments on it given its contents. Illbleed, the Sega Dreamcast Illbleed, where I was called the fat one and that I should be fired. We have determined that.
No.
It can't be you. Look how slender your new hair is. I just got a haircut. For those reasons.
It accentuates how fat the rest of my body is. It's like a downward slope. This person is fat, and they are making too many Simpsons references. So that
not... could be, like, other than the weight thing, could be any of us.
Yeah.
Oh, why are we obsessing over the comments of YouTube? It's what matters most, people.
You hurt my feelings.
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
That is Luscious Jackson.
This song is great.
Hey. I love this song. Naked Eye.
That is very 96, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That is Luscious Jackson's album Fever In, Fever Out, debuting this week. And for a minute, I was like, we already talked about this song.
We have upcoming Laser Time.
We'll upcoming Laser Time where this song
factors in. Oh, 90s music.
Yeah. And yeah, I remember watching this video a lot. And they're, I think... Was the whole video 60s styled, or was it
in
just
an airport?
Like they had blue dresses that were like very straight and very like they seemed.
They looked like Austin Powers extras.
Yeah, a year before Austin Powers, we had yet to talk about Austin Powers on the show.
Well,
it's coming.
Borat beat him to it.
It's coming.
Office impressions race.
Oh yeah, good. I saw Luscious Jackson open for REM.
Really?
Wow.
At the Anaheim Duck Pond.
God damn it! Anaheim I had Duck tickets Pond. For
right,
REM
right around this time, like 95 or 96.
Wow, really?
I had tickets for REM. So excited! First concert tickets I ever bought in a. Fucking tornado. Hurricane blew the roof off the Florida Tallahassee Civic Center.
You remember which hurricane?
Huh?
You remember which hurricane?
No, because...
These are things that helped me date it.
Shit. No, I don't, because, like... Again, I'm from Florida. A hurricane just hit my hometown for the first time dead center in 10 years, but every time a hurricane went through, we got residual damage.
Yeah.
Right. Every single time. Flooding, lots of damage. No power. Anyway, I'm from Florida. I'll talk more about that in the next episode.
Yeah, and I mentioned before, but anytime a hurricane hits the Gulf and hits, like, you know, the panhandle, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, the bands will always hit us in southern Illinois. So it's like, we don't get the, you know, the hurricane force winds, but we're south enough in Illinois.
It pushes the weather, like, all over the country.
The bigger hurricanes will actually extend up past Tennessee, Kentucky, and then it's like, so it's going to rain for a week.
Yeah.
But anyway, Fever In, Fever Out, was toured during the Lilith Fair throughout 96-97. Did pretty well, certified gold. But also out this week in 1996, Wilco being there.
Nope.
Danzig's Black Acid Devil as one word.
Oh,
so,
my.
Black Acid Devil.
Sorry, that's Zandig.
Zandig. Mm-hmm. Ghostface Kill as Iron Man. Mm-hmm. As well as Slipknot, Mate, Feed, Kill, Repeat.
What a pleasant sounding album.
The debut album from Slipknot, although I think the band at this point considers it more of a demo or not a true first album, because it's a limited release and it's...
A lot of disco.
Yeah. Well, they're experimenting. There's some more death metal, there's more funk metal, there's more heavy metal. Like, they're really kind of like stretching out and seeing what works for them and what they want to do. And they find their sound, and I think later on...
Their identity, because they're all different characters,
and
essentially.
And the thing of, like, people being able to portray themselves as someone else factors into the lyrics, because tons of the lyrics... And track titles, I think, are references to Werewolf the Apocalypse.
What?
Which makes this all make so much more sense.
It all ties together.
So this is Henry's favorite album.
Yes. And I've told this story elsewhere, but my favorite Slipknot memory. I went to see Point Fest in St. Louis, Missouri. 1057 The Point. 14, 15 years ago. And it was headlined by 311, which really
The government should investigate 311.
Which didn't make it. This was a pre-9/11. So we were mere months away because it was 2001. But
Amber was still the color of your energy.
It was. Well, it never was. Jesus, let's be real. But Weezer was there right when the Green Album was blowing up, so that was like really big get. Alien Ant Farm, Cold. Nice. Slipknot was supposed to be there. So the Slipknot, you could tell all the Slipknot fans.
Seven band members didn't show up.
Because you're like, those are the Slipknot fans. Mm-hmm. They're all dressed up and ready to party, which is like, great.
Gas masks and
All
overweight people in NWO t-shirts.
they basically all look like that one guy in Mortal Kombat 3 with the
Cabal.
Cabal, that's it,
El Cabal. But, it's fine. Like, great. Like, you came to the band, you came to the show dressed up. Like, go for it, because that's... Band shtick. It's crazy costumes.
We make fun of those people, the ICP folks, but that is fucking cool.
It's like go for it. But what was great is when 75% of the way through the show, and it's a 12-hour show with two stages and all that, they're announced like, oh, Slipknot's not coming. And so now you have all these really angry, so Our Lady Peace goes on.
Uh-oh.
And the Boss Tones were there. Man, it was a great show, I gotta say.
I saw the Boss Tones so much during this period.
As we're leaving, everyone clears the fuck out when 311 shows up. Because it's like, everyone just mass exodus. And it's like, you should not have had 311 headline this. I don't think they realized Weezer was going to come back as big as they did. Because Weezer went on second to last.
Yeah, that's not good.
And they're like, we're all leaving. And this 12-year-old kid who's walking away, all done up in his Slipknot gear, we're all like disheveledly walking away. And he just says out loud, 311 sucked balls!
Oh, man.
And I'm
I felt sorry for that kid for a second. I'm like, oh, we have Slipknot. No,
but whatever. No, that guy came original. to the strictest definition.
Anyway.
Good for him.
Movies, everybody.
Movie.
1996.
Hey.
Okay. So we'll start at the bottom and move back up to the main one. Bad Moon, which is a movie that tanked about a werewolf family.
Yeah.
It's one of those, it feels like it's a, to use a term that you use, shitlords level kind of campy horror movie from what
but
I've seen.
But I watched some clips. It's not even that interesting.
Yeah.
Super low budget.
I think it's been re-released recently by like Shout, not maybe not Fat Shout Factory, but like it's been put on Blu-ray recently.
Bad Moon?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Weird.
That's my favorite magic card from Revised. It's good. It's a black, it doesn't matter. Here's a trade.
That's the one you play against the Creedence Clearwater Revival?
Yes.
I got that.
Okay. Oh, he's really good. Mr. Creedence, he's great at this.
A Fogarty demon.
It could be Creedence Clearwater Reviver.
Reviver, okay.
And it brings you back to life.
That makes sense. Well,
I know nothing about Magic
that wouldn't
the
be
Gathering.
A black card. No, they have there's Raised Dead. You're right. This all checks out. Here's the trailer.
Bad Moon.
Okay.
That's all I wanted to play.
We're good.
Is there anything else in this?
No, it's all
family alone.
Mom? Yes, sweetheart? Can you leave the door open a crack?
Oh my god, my door's
so
a werewolf.
It's one of the Hemingways. Mm-hmm. And that little shit who played Dennis the Menace, I think.
Ah, Jay North.
Yes. No, the new one.
Got him good.
It did come out. It was a Shout Factory Blu-ray
all
this
right.
summer. Wow. And it's about like a relative moving back with the family, and it turns out he's a werewolf, and he's going after his sister's son or whatever.
Love
I
it.
I thought you were a werewolf. I was.
The movies here are not remarkable. In
yeah, larger than life. Bill Murray.
Dude,
and
can you remember when Bill Murray wasn't a beloved institution and was making garbage?
Just when whatever, yeah.
Yeah, this is larger than life, a movie about a man inheriting an elephant. Coming off his other Howard Franklin production of The Man Who Knew Too Little. Again, he's like, Bill Murray used to star in movies nobody cared about.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
very weird yep. to think about. But I do love that this is his last collaboration with Howard Franklin. And Howard Franklin has a co-directing credit on the only movie Bill Murray directed, Quick Change, which is
right.
amazing. A fantastic
Love
film.
And this is post-Groundhog Day, right?
Post-Groundhog
yeah.
Day. No, he wouldn't work with Harold Ramis anymore.
Still, sadly, too many years, well, like 3 or 4 years before Backstreet Boys did the song Larger Than
Larger
Life, which would have been perfect for the trailer.
That has overtaken the SEO for this film.
Yeah.
Yeah. But here's a trailer.
I had a clown for a dad.
Now, Mr. Corcoran, as to your bequest. There is the bulk of your inheritance.
Oh, no.
Jack Corcoran has just
elephant?
Inherited a big problem.
Right. Like, that is literally the Stampy episode of The Simpsons.
A yeah. little bit, yeah.
Hang on, I gotta know where this trailer goes.
I've got an apartment with a no pets clause.
And there's only one way to solve it.
All right, who cares?
Jernee Garofalo. Oh.
This is one of the better bad Bill Murray movies, and it's still pretty bad.
Did anyone see this?
I did, yeah.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. I have been a Bill Murray fan my entire life. So, yeah. Yes, of course I saw it.
I'm a Bill Murray fan. That's why I didn't watch this.
Yeah, I know.
We also got Dear God with Greg Kinnear.
Oh, back when Greg Kinnear could open a movie. God bless him.
That does seem ambitious.
Fresh off of Talk Soup.
Trailer.
This is addressed to Mr. God, Superman, Elvis, the Easter Bunny, and God.
And a mission.
Dear God, we still don't have running water or hallway lights.
Blah, blah, blah. So, I don't know if you want to. I hate to bring this up. It is election year, though. The white privilege of this film's premise of that Greg Kinnear's a criminal who gets charged with something and sentenced to a job. A job at the post office.
That's a great job, though.
Yeah, I know. Again,
you
girlfriend's
get
dad, pensions.
Federal benefits
oh, yeah.
and shit.
Oh, yeah.
Civil service, damn it.
We'll have to explain to kids what those our kids what those were.
Yes.
But yes, it's a good he works at the post office, ends up in the dead letter section, and starts answering mail addressed to God.
Does he get in trouble because he opened mail that's not his?
That is a federal crime. Mm-hmm. You're
but
right.
It,
Gary Marshall should go to jail too. R.I.P. Gary Marshall.
Does God show up at the end
this.
Like Greg Kinnear, what the fuck?
Where
this
all
is
my
mail?
FBI
I was gonna get to it.
There.
This movie sucks.
You read all my TV guides.
But the big movie out this week is Romeo plus Juliet.
Dude.
Debuts this week and is number one this week because of the way the date ranges.
I get a lot of trailers when we get clips for this, and it's fascinating to get to look at this trailer because they don't really want to tell you up front what the dialogue's gonna sound like.
Yeah.
Yes.
Don't know.
So that's why I couldn't find this on YouTube, so Chris grabbed a clip. But mm-hmm. I did see this opening week, mm-hmm. and I don't even know why, mm-hmm. but I was like, this seems fascinating to mm-hmm. me. And this is Leonardo DiCaprio pre-Titanic.
It's kind of the one that made him a big hunk.
And what's her name? Claire.
Claire Danes. Yeah. Paul Rudd and Jamie Kennedy and John Leguizamo and Harold Perrineau. It's got a great cast.
Ryan Dennehy, damn it. Mm-hmm.
But it is a super stylized 90s look at Romeo and Juliet.
Wait a minute. I want to say this. This is the most 90s movie ever made.
So it is,
yes.
But it's 90s,
and it's
even
great.
Exaggerated by 90s standard. Yes. It's like take the 90s that you think of and then like crank it till the dial breaks.
It's
and it's like it's Baz Luhrmann who like would later do Moulin Rouge, which was great, and just recently Gatsby, which was very entertaining. I like
it down.
Over the top is his aesthetic.
Yes.
And with all three of those movies you just mentioned, I love everything about them except the direction.
Sure.
I love the production design. It's always fantastic. I think it's his partner that does all the costumes. The costumes are like the costumes in Moulin Rouge are amazing. Yeah, yeah. But then he goes so crazy with the cameras and the editing, especially.
Yeah, that's true.
And it doesn't need to be that crazy, and it bugs me. This movie has grown on me. I did not like it at the time.
I didn't either, but I saw it recently. It is,
and it's grown on me over time.
You watch it with your mouth agape. Like it is amazing to watch. Yeah. And if you want to learn the basis of like what I think is every Final Fantasy game design ever, it's all from this film. It is. The open shirts, the fucking like
it is stylish as shit. Yeah,
yeah. The gun fu.
Yeah. So yeah, they
are
all
they
the
in
dialogue,
like a Mexican hell in that.
Well, like the fucking disco angelic look of like the Final Fantasy game. Like it has all that. It's great.
So the dialogue is the straight up Shakespeare dialogue, and the visuals are super modern day of 1996.
It is a bold thing
and,
to do.
But so. The movie starts hard and fast.
Yeah.
Where this is 4 minutes in, and it's when the Montagues and the Capulet gang boys all meet up, and they're driving tricked out cars.
Yeah.
They meet up at a gas station, and it's the whole like, "Do you bite your thumb at me?" I do bite my thumb, but I do not bite my thumb. And they're like,
Jamie Kennedy screaming these Shakespearean dialogue
and
is fantastic.
And basically the scene is they're. I'm trying to insult you, but I have to be careful because I don't want to start a full-on family war right here, right now. But I don't like you. But oh Jesus, we are in some shit. So imagine
this dialogue is great.
Bright
said that about Shakespeare. What a what a bold statement.
Yes, dialogue's great. Chris Antista. But again, just imagine this dialogue in a gas station with guys with spiked blonde hair and ridiculously over the top.
Like glistening Chevy Impalas.
Do you bite your thumb at us, sir?
I do bite my thumb, sir!
Do you bite your thumb at us?
Sir. Is love our side if I say I?
No!
No, sir, I do not bite my thumb at you, sir, but I bite my thumb, sir!
Do you quarrel, sir? Quarrel, son? No, sir!
But if you do, sir, I am for you, I serve as good a man as you!
No, Bennett? Here comes our kinsman, say better!
Yes, sir, but you lie!
Two of you be mine!
They are scared to death because John Leguizamo was about to exit the gas station.
I've never seen this, but this movie sounds like it would be the favorite of like drama teachers who turn their chair around when they talk to the class. Let's rap.
I would argue
this
that
movie's
they
would
hate it. And when I talk about the dialogue, it's because the dialogue, and it's what makes this movie special, is not incidental. It's irrelevant. Because I think Baz Luhrmann knew people aren't going to be able to understand and decipher these things these people are saying. Every element of the story is told so hyper-visually, which makes it really interesting.
Plus, it's like, even if you haven't read Romeo and Juliet, which if you went to public school in America, you probably did.
I swear to God, you could watch this movie with the sound off and get every single second of it.
It's so, like,
but don't do that, because the sound is amazing.
Yeah.
The soundtrack ended up, like, killing it.
Oh,
man. Yeah. But yeah,
are they covers of like modern songs, but with like bit my thumb?
You've heard the Romeo and Juliet soundtrack your entire life.
I really have.
Yeah, the Cardigans, Loving Me.
Yeah, Love Fool is on there. Garbage, now. Everclear.
So
you've heard all.
Did I hear any of these songs in the in the universe of the movie,
the universe of the movie is like fucking post-apocalyptic Miami.
Okay, but so they're listening to music where people speak normally, they still speak like...
Sorry, it plays non-diegetically,
Dave.
No, some of it's diegetic.
Is it?
They've got party scenes and shit. And...
With Paul Rudd.
Baby Paul Rudd. He's so cute.
Much like Mortal Kombat soundtrack in 1995, the soundtrack was so popular, they made a volume 2 of the soundtrack.
Oh, no.
Mortal Kombat's was called More Combat. And this one was called Music from the Motion Picture Volume 2.
It wasn't music from and inspired by. Yeah. Those are my favorite.
They could have done Romeo Multiplied by Juliet.
Yeah. It's mostly the orchestral score, and then I think a handful of songs that weren't on, such as Tybalt Arrives from the Butthole Surfers.
Cool. Oh, wonderful.
This is around the time, I've mentioned that we made a lot of, we would film movies in high school and college, and would in our film classes, we did film a Romeo and Juliet movie, and it makes no sense, and we got an A, because, I don't know why, and I do not proclaim that this is good, mostly because everyone was laughing too much, because it was just ADD is all get out, like it's just smash cuts, fast cuts, like nothing makes
sense. Just like
the
movie.
Yeah, and it was right after this movie had come out, and we're just like, so you can either do a book report, you can do a thing, you can thing, and her teacher, who was one of those teachers who, like, she had to be, like, one day out of college, so everyone in the school is like, she looks awesome. Like, every girl is like, man, I hope I look... Because when you're 14, 15, like, 26, oh my God, basically dead. But anyway, she loved it, so we all got A's, and I was like, thank you, Romeo and Juliet, for inspiring me to do anything that got me an A tied to Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, I will say I think Claire Danes is the best actor in this, although Pete Postlethwaite is close. He's the friar. I miss him so much. Yeah. He elevated everything he was in.
Kobayashi, baby.
Yep. But modernizing it brings out a problem that I don't think anyone anticipated it doing.
Teen suicide?
No, in that they have freedom of movement and cars. So they get married, and then they spend the night together, and then Romeo takes off. Why does she not go with him?
Yeah.
It makes no sense now.
Or give him a call.
Yes, like, there are phones.
Yes, you don't have to believe he's dead, or I forget how it works, but yeah.
Actually, that's a good question. Are there phones? Because there is Federal Express.
Yep.
There is post-haste mail, which I thought was cute. But it doesn't make sense when people are so much more independent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just such a fun, like,
it's the longest music video you've ever seen.
Yeah, yes, that's true.
It is so MTV. Mm-hmm.
And I would never want a rash of these kinds of movies.
Oh, God, no.
But I would love one a decade, A plus.
This is great. If an alien came down and says, what was the 90s, I would just show this. It is great.
It's also the 1690s.
I love this. I love this film. And I did not love it when it came out.
And there was a point where, I think I've said this before too, there was a brief period of maybe a few months where Baz Luhrmann was vaguely attached to a Silver Surfer movie, I wish so much that had happened. Because if anyone could have just told a visually stunning story of a guy doing soliloquies in space about the nature of man...
John Goodman as Galactus.
This is the man to do it. I really wish that had happened. But anyway... Romeo and Juliet, 20 years old.
So good.
Wow,
killed high school high in theaters.
The lack of a week.
But TV this week. Mm. Speaking of John Goodman,
not
really.
He's not in this episode of Roseanne entitled "Satan, Darling."
Did we play this on
Laser
Times episode
about crossovers? Yes.
Crossover universes. Roseanne was attached to make an American version of Absolutely Fabulous, which just had a movie come out. But that with Carrie Fisher, and I think pilot was shot, and I've never seen it. But this is Patsy Nadina appearing on Roseanne as their characters from Absolutely Fabulous, which actually happened in Roseanne way more than I would have got as a little kid. There's a Netflix collection, and the end credits of that show, every episode is an old-timey Hollywood person, usually in character. Milton Berle in drag, Stan Freeberg playing an old character. Like, you just wouldn't recognize him unless you had this knowledge of like pre-1960s Hollywood.
But
so cool.
Yeah, I did include a clip of... Roseanne and her sister meeting Patsy and Adina.
A meet. Eddie, Pat.
Hello.
This is Roseanne and Jackie.
Hello.
Oh, hey, you say you're from a foreign country.
We're from England.
Oh. Cool. Well, sis here's dating a prince.
Dating a prince.
I suppose it must be Edward.
The prince is Jim Varney, by the way.
Yeah. But the Prince Edward joke in 1996.
There is a Prince Edward.
Oh, wait. Who am
I thinking? There's a British prince. You're thinking Prince Albert in a can?
No, wait. I'm thinking of Lady Di's.
Charles.
Charles. Never mind. But yeah, as we mentioned in the crossover episode, that technically doesn't even count.
Right.
Because that whole season's non-canon.
Dream season where they hit the lottery.
Yes. Yeah. And that's why they're at a fancy party where they meet Patsy and Dina. But another aspect of the episode is that it's a Rosemary's Baby parody where Darlene is having a demonic child or something.
Ooh. Okay.
But again, doesn't really, none of it counts because it's the season that was undone. Yeah.
I caught up on my demon movies this
Darlene
year.
Darlene is on an upcoming episode of Talking Simpsons, baby. The chronological breakdown of every Simpsons episode.
Well, speaking of the Simpsons, try not to make this like talking more Simpsons.
Yeah.
But
this is important.
Season 8 is a great season and there's some classics in here. So, but we have the classic Simpsons episode, probably in my top 10.
Yep.
You Only Move Twice.
Yeah.
Which features the Simpsons moving to a new town, Cypress Creek, where Homer works for the supervillain Hank Scorpio, played by Albert Brooks.
Scorpio.
And
A. Brooks.
I attached a clip of one of the most controversial scenes in the entire episode where I think we're going to have to rehash this argument.
Uh-oh. Sure.
I call this room.
I am here to welcome you on behalf of the president of the Globex Corporation. Me! Try the papayas. They're juicy and full of papain. Makes you strong like Popeye. Popeye, Popeye in. See, same thing, same. Forget it. How are you? I'm Hank Scorpio.
Wow, my boss.
Don't call me that word. I don't like things that elevate me above the other people. I'm just like you. Oh, sure, I come later in the day, I get paid a lot more, and I take longer vacations, but I don't like the word boss. Hey, look at my feet.
Okay.
You like those moccasins? Look in your closet, there's a pair for you. Don't like them? Then neither do I. Get the hell out of here. Ever see a guy say goodbye to a shoe?
Yes, once.
According to The Ringer, he does say yes once.
I've always heard yes once.
I heard, yeah, it's fun. Yeah. Forever. And the subtitles back that up, but we're doing Talking
Simpsons.
And Frankie
Yak, but it, yeah.
They can't be trusted.
Wait. Yeah. Yes, it's fun?
Yeah, it's fun.
Hang on.
Yes, once.
No, once.
Yes, clear as day. Yes, once.
But, so that's the first controversy.
But they're both great because Albert Brooks and Dan Castellaneta improv this dialogue. Yeah, that happens very rarely in The Simpsons. Oh, most people aren't allowed to do that.
Look at my feet. Okay.
Yeah.
the quickness of that is so rare in any animation.
Yeah.
But
so that's the first controversy. Mm-hmm. That's just a Laser Time central controversy. But in the world at large,
yes,
there's a controversy whether... When he says yes once, is he referring to what just happened, or that at some other point in Homer's life he's seen a person throw a shoe? They're both funny for different reasons.
Yeah. I think this. It's improv, unimportant, and funny both ways.
But the producers of the show, funny both ways. Yeah,
yes,
the producers of the show said it's. What they believe the joke is that Homer has seen this before in his life because he's a weirdo and it's happened. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the episode's great. All the Albert Brooks stuff, Bart being in that new school.
Yeah. I'm from Canada.
And they say I'm a little slow. I fell off the jungle gym and woke up in here. Oh, so good. That school.
Wait, is it in Flintstone?
No, that's where
Bart's.
But Bart reading cursive is great. Jolly.
Oh, and you don't know script? Cursive? Well, I know hell, damn. But yeah, this episode, I remember having friends over, and this is still when Simpsons was on a roll. Every episode was a phenomenal knock it out of the park, and we watched this one, and we're like, this was incredible.
Yeah.
And
I was so happy, because I'm a Bond nerd.
And
there's a lot of jokes sprinkled in there. Hey, if you could shoot some federal agents on your way out, I'd really appreciate it.
And it's the rare time when Homer is a straight man, and in a show where Homer is increasingly becoming a cartoon, this was great to be like, no, he's just a man who works at a job, and he's just super oblivious, just wants to do his job and leave.
Buys Tom Landry's hat.
Hammock District. That's on third. And yeah, working
wow,
is...
Tom work, when we,
but this, it also predicted Silicon Valley behavior.
Yeah.
It's like this is North Californians to an incredible degree before it was even happening.
And this is, for me, as I want to get on this tangent, but this is the...
I love your...
The end of the show. This episode is phenomenal, but it is breaching the rubber band reality that they have established of you can stretch this, but it has to snap back and be kind of realistic. And he ends this with the Denver Broncos, which is fine. That's funny. But the end
animated
of this
sequence of them playing football poorly, and every subtle detail is so funny.
The ball hitting his head.
Yes.
But this season, Frank Grimes is the last episode or one of the last, second to last. That should have been the end of the show.
Yeah.
You put a pin in it, and it's ending. Great. Homer is now, you've broken the universe, you've acknowledged every silly thing he's ever done, he's been to space, you've put a mirror up and made them unrelatable. Now this family is no relation to the families of the 80s and 90s who attached themselves to a show that was about taking down, our elected officials are full of shit, our parents don't know what they're doing, kids are smarter than you think, but also need guidance, and will blow up the world if they got the chance. Like, the whole world is a mess. Yeah. Like, I mean, when that episode happens, that is over. And everything after that is a fever dream.
I think there are good, like, there are very good episodes in later seasons, but season 8 is like the last Simpsons season that I can say, like, I'll watch every episode here. They're all good.
Yeah,
there's no bad episode. There's no Principal in the Pauper.
Yeah.
But there was one other thing I wanted to bring up about this episode is that I remember in the lead up to this, which I think, you know, it could have been the premiere, and so, like, because we did have the Treehouse of Horror last week, but I don't know, maybe if baseball games happened in some different way, it wouldn't have aired that week, but this was, like, supposed to be a big episode, and it was all about the Simpsons are moving out of Springfield, and so a part of me actually believed, like, wow, are they gonna?
It's called You Only Move Twice because it's the second time they did it.
Yeah, but so...
But they never specify the names of the episodes on the show. You'd have to, like, be reading TV Guide.
They're just saying they moved in Cape Fear.
Yeah, but this was, like, it felt like more of a thing. Like, even the first commercial break is everyone saying goodbye to the Simpsons, that montage. But, yeah, I mean, it turned out at the end of the episode. The sun did it, but I love the episode.
Well, they did move twice. They moved out, and then they moved back.
And I love the Ringer article about the whole thing is, like, the show writers have sworn never to bring him back. Mm-hmm. It was perfect. They can't recreate it. And the movie has Albert Brooks as almost the exact same type of character.
Yeah.
And clearly, Russ Cargill, the movie is fantastic, by the way. God damn it. We'll talk about it next year.
Next year. The movie's almost 10 years old.
Hard, soft.
Soft, tough.
Soft.
Moving on. We could stay here forever.
So not quite as classic was the show Public Morals, which had its premiere and series finale on October 30th, 1996. It was produced by Stephen Bochco of NYPD Blue.
NYPD Blue, LA Law,
And starred Donald Loge.
Yeah,
Donald the cab driver on MTV.
Wow.
But it had, it was, it premiered to low ratings and critical scorn, so the other 12 produced episodes never aired.
Ooh.
And this, to me, seems like the beginning of Donald Loge's, like, every time he tries a TV show, it doesn't work out for
and
him.
And he's awesome.
He's on Gotham now. That's working out. But before, like, he had, like, a bunch of shows that lasted
that's
one
him on Gotham.
It is him on Gotham.
Holy crap.
Of Terriers and Dow of Steve fame. What?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Wow.
Hello? Also, two more finales to talk about. The John Larroquette Show was canceled three episodes into its fourth season on October 30th.
Weird.
So he, like, it was originally a way darker show about, like, an alcoholic who I think owned a bar. I don't know.
I remember being
really
transfixed on it because it was so dark.
It was very dark.
I want to say they were in a bus station.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
But had that same filter, like, as Cosby, where it's just like, this is a bit dark. Like, it's a bit, it's not like your typical sitcom. Like, I think it's single camera kind of
wanted to go back and watch this.
But yeah, so it was originally a darker show, but he, John Larroquette, in an attempt to keep the show going, he made it lighter, a bit more funnier, a bit more funny, and actually had Frasier on the premiere episode of this season, like, as a cameo to boost ratings, but it was canceled, and it had four episodes that didn't air until it was rerun on the USA Network years later.
Jeez.
A more notable finale this week, November 2nd, 1996, the 193rd and final episode of the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon.
Wow.
And 96?
96, So what was it, 87 and 96?
Well, it was like 87, 88.
Well, I said you want to be careful with these animated long runs, because usually they write all the scripts in like one big burst when they make a show like this. And then in order to keep it in syndication and keep people buying it, they take thrown out scripts and make 5 to 6 new episodes to make a new season.
They're like, the seasons don't, like, it's not like a batch of 20 episode or 50. It's like, this one has 100 episodes in it.
And they're all written like after the fact, so they're kind of bad. And, like, I think this season is probably the same
thing. This season only had 8 episodes. And it was a weird, like, different status quo at this point, because you've been doing this for almost 10 years and you've done 190 plus episodes. So this entire season, Krang and Shredder are not the villains. They're only in like 3 of the 8 episodes. The main villain is a character named the Lord Dreg,
who looks like an idiot.
Yeah.
Like,
wait, Lord Dreg. So they're really referencing that he's the dregs of their ideas.
Yeah.
Like, they've scraped the bottom of the barrel.
Yep, nobody's favorite action figure.
He's the dregs.
Man, they were this close to giving Rap and Michelangelo's own show at this point.
So I'm just going to read the final episode's description because it's pretty epic. So Lord Dreg uses a morphing suit capable of instantly draining life forces from others and absorbs the power of five super beings and multiplies their combined power to become a god. He comes after the turtles, who must travel to Dimension X and get Krang's android body from the destroyed Technodrome if they are to defeat him.
Which is just like, no. Tapping out.
Yeah, though it is like, does tie into things like, oh, they have to go back to the Technodrome, they have to get
like, the
Krang's body, which
has
is like,
been like in various states of exploded or moved into a different since the first season.
Even,
so
yeah,
it's like,
but like even that after 193 episodes, they're still going back to that thing. Like,
yeah,
that thing that's
going back
the
to the well.
Yeah, but man, like the first, I still say the first season of this show is still pretty good. It's a very specific type. It's like a beautifully written show, but it's like there's a consistent one story that's told, and it's almost like serialized where like these things lead it to the next. After that is where it becomes a toy of the week thing. We're like, well, now we got to talk about Swing Nut and Screw Loose. It's time to go. Like, that you got to do, it's the Rat King episode and the Leatherhead episode.
Didn't it also have the distinction of like it's running in syndication but making new episodes for Saturday morning, weekly
CBS.
Saturday morning
CBS
show.
Took it over like three or four seasons
and this is also the time 1996 is like the dying days of the Saturday morning cartoon.
Part of the reason they switched, I have to assume, is because around this time is when Power Rangers switched from Rita Repulsa to Lord Zedd. Not to be confused with Lord Dreg. But anyway, I never watched this, and when I looked up what he looked like, I'm like, that's the worst character design I've ever seen. I feel like you guys just stopped trying.
And that's TV.
Okay.
Games this week. This is one of those weird things where games in 1996, the N64 launched over a month ago in September, and we're in the November. Wave Race 64 finally comes out.
Ooh.
This is the third game for the N64.
Wow.
There was over a month of just no game.
I mean,
Mario
64
exactly.
Can keep you tied it over for
it
a month.
Mario 64, Pilot 64, Wave Race 64.
I
love Wave Race. It's known at the time, especially for its water effects. Mm-hmm. Like, they really like promoted, like, look. Because up to that point, like, SNES, NES, like, water effects weren't a thing. It was like, it's a flat sprite that
not
maybe...
Not until 3D, where there's still a competition over who has the best water
effects. Yeah, and this was a case where, like, it had a convincing spray that would kick up, and you could do ramps off of, jumps off of ramps and then, like, push the nose of the jet ski down and go under the water, and you could feel the buoyancy of the jet ski lift you back up. It was just a fun racing game.
You could ride a dolphin, right?
I think there was, like, a dolphin thing in there, too. But I love this game, and I love the soundtrack. It's a lot of fun.
Does this have an issue with being re-released because the sponsorships?
There are Kawasaki
jet
all
skis
over it, but it's on Virtual Console on the Wii or Wii U, and it's actually taken out.
Wow.
So they went in and stripped
it
out.
No hope for the Butterfinger Jet Moto then.
also out this week, Legacy of Kain Blood Omen for PS1. And this is one of those Silicon Knights who would go on to do... Metal Gear Solid The Twin Snakes Two Human
and Troll Bob Mackey
Eternal Darkness Legacy of Kain Blood Omen. This is the beginning of the whole Blood Omen Soul Reaver world. It's an overhead like action RPG. I never played it, but I had a friend who was playing it at the time, and I only saw him play it for like one evening or something. So strangely enough, I don't have a lot of experience with this, despite it being a very vampiric, you know, violence ridden kind of Zelda-ish game, like Zelda 1 style game. But it was a big release, and I know a lot of people, if 302010.net, hop in the comments.
Get on until Soul Reaver, so
I just totally missed this, but it started 20 years ago. The Earthworm Jim 2 port for Sega Saturn came out this week. Earthworm Jim 2 is great.
Yep.
Tender.
Yeah, Tommy Tallarico's soundtrack, as well as like the Super NES version, was really good. Like, it's just
that was what was special about it. The music was completely different, right? For Sega CD,
I forget how this worked. Mm. There was a Sega CD Earthworm Jim 1, but the Saturn got Earthworm Jim 2. But
Earthworm Jim is one of those sad relics of the 90s. I'm sad we lost and went away.
Yeah,
I feel like it should have been with us forever.
The original game was 94, and it was like off the success of Disney's Aladdin. Like, a lot of the same animators and the teams for Shiny like went on to make this character.
I don't hear people talk about it in that context, but these are the people who made Disney's Aladdin, a game that looked like the cartoon it was representing, and they kind of moved away from that to make their own cartoon character in reverse, and it was Earthworm Jim, and I loved it.
There was like a hot period of this exact time where there was a TV show, toy line, Earthworm Jim 2, and then it just like...
all went away.
And then way later is Earthworm Jim 64, but don't even look. Soviet Strike, which is a continuation of the Desert Strike, Jungle Strike, Urban Strike, helicopter games...
Labor strike.
Labor strike.
Teacher strike.
Is this the
Teacher
last one, or is Nuclear Strike?
Nuclear is after this. Okay. So this is the first PS1 game, and it had photorealistic backgrounds, which means really blurry JPEGs of like pre-MapQuest, pre-Google Earth.
The last boss is a GIF of Saddam Hussein.
But I got this solely off of how much I loved Desert and Jungle Strike, which shows you the roots of this, because Desert Strike was straight up like, oh, the Gulf War's happening? Here's a game where you get to go fly around in the Gulf War and like be a cool helicopter.
Yeah.
But now we're in Soviet Strike because, well, we're out of ideas. The Russians, why not? Soviet Union's not a thing, but you know, whatever. But it had like FMV scenes with like actors filmed. And,
God, I almost want to stream it just to see these cutscenes.
Yeah, I didn't like it nearly as much as the old games, but it was fine. And also out this week, Kingsfield 2. Which is a first-person like adventure game, but notable because it's from Software, and this started planting several seeds that you would see blossom in Demon's Souls, Dark Souls, Bloodborne. Some of the ideas that are at
I mean, I remember the first one was around the launch of the PlayStation, and just being like, this is, like, when I was a kid, I thought, like, this would be an awesome game. I'm just going through all these dungeons, and it's in first-person, but it's like... it's really weird and lonely and
weird,
creepy.
It's weird, desolate.
You don't know where to go, what to do. No one tells you.
Yeah, and
just
it's
like
really,
Ninja Kid.
And it's really empty, and it's not like the Souls games where you could do a lot of environmental cues of like, oh, I guess this seems right-ish. Yeah. I'll go this way and see what happens. It's not as nice, but it's neat to see 20 years ago. The big game, though, this week...
So, sorry, one thing, though. Talking about Wave Race, and this week is like a weird minefield because like a ton of games are listed as the 31st. One of them was Jet Moto.
Was
apparently
it?
It's listed as October 31st, 1996. And I just, when you brought up Wave Race, I just, that was my like, well, I'm not getting an N64 for years. I can't afford it. Mm-hmm. And my friends who have this game are like lording it over me. I got Jet Moto.
I loved it.
It's a good game, but it's uglier.
It's ugly
way
shit.
Uglier.
And you're racing on little
way
hover.
More, yeah,
you're racing on hovercrafts.
But with the cool addition of
hover
a grapple
bikes.
Beam.
That was
like,
cool.
Yeah, you could take corners by just like reaching up a beam of electricity out to a pole and swinging around, helping you turn. Mm. Neat. Mm.
And there's a tie to the big game that came out this week, which is Twisted Metal 2, which does have a Jet Moto map in it that you
and,
could unlock.
Yeah. What, same developers, I guess?
Single Track? Yeah,
yeah.
I don't think so.
Single Track or 989?
Yeah.
No, that was the next
it was
one.
pre-989, but Twisted Metal 2 came out
so
this week.
Good.
So good.
Yes.
We have a video on our YouTube channel of just us watching the endings.
Yes,
it is wonderful.
The endings of Twisted Metal 1 were a static screen. So this is a car combat game where a bunch of people in cars tricked out with guns and missiles and ridiculous power-ups just get in an arena and shoot
all
each other.
For the honor of pleasing the devil.
Yeah.
Well,
and granting a wish.
A low-level demon who can grant wishes named Calypso.
Yeah.
Grants you.
And, like, the first game had Sweet Tooth, who was, like, I guess the face of the franchise. But for me, this has the best addition, Axel.
Yes.
Yeah, Axel.
The man who is stuck in between two giant wheels.
He was referenced on The Simpsons. In the latest Treehouse of Horror.
Yeah, his
arms, this month.
His arms are fused in... He is built into the giant wheels.
Yeah.
And his ending is him ripping his arms out. But, so the ending... The games, like, you go all over the world. Like, the second... This Twisted Metal 2 has, like, better stage design, better, like... It introduces the Street Fighter moves where you can do, like, fireball motions or... Like, it's more like Mortal Kombat because it's not... Well, it's both. It's quarter circle movement, or there's like down left up Mortal Kombat style where you're just rather than fireball motions you're doing. But you could shoot different freezing beams and homing missiles but again, the crazy thing was when you beat the game, Calypso's the wishes he can grant went from Twisted Metal 1, a static screen of a FMV live action actor in pretty bad makeup with a text scroll that says, "And you wished for the following thing and this happened." This was motion comic graphics.
So good.
Granting your wishes
video.
In total monkey's paw fashion. Yeah. And we did, like you said, on our YouTube channel, we watched all the endings in a row because these have been stuck with me forever. But here's an example of Calypso who really leans into each of his wishes that he grants. But this is Spectre, who's an actor. And he won. He beat everybody.
That's exactly the one I wanted to hear.
And this is the one that typifies all of the monkey's paw stuff.
Ken Masters stepped out of his car and stood before me. He had waited his whole life for this meeting, a chance to make his ultimate dream come true.
I'm an actor, and I'm really, really good. And I've been struggling, searching for my big break for over 6 weeks. Please, Calypso, you've got to make me famous. Make it so the entire world knows my face.
Make it so the entire world knows my face.
Be more specific. Yes. Wishing.
Wait. So we've all seen it, but Dana, what do you think is the twist to...
Wow. Make it so the whole world knows my face. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But if you were a trickster demon, what would you do?
I could frame him for murder.
Ooh, that's a pretty good one.
Frame him for killing the Pope or something. Killing someone even more famous.
Raping the Pope.
Raping the Pope. Mm-hmm. I would rip his face off and blow it up huge and put it on the moon.
Oh.
Your wish is granted.
Am I really
don't
close?
Touch the
face.
Oh, I can see all
hold
of them
on
now.
There. He's stretching his face across the planet. Now in the new world.
When Ken first woke up, he thought he'd been dreaming. But then he looked around and realized he was thousands of feet above New York City. And his face felt hot. The driver of Spectre had gotten his wish. Now the entire world knew Ken's face.
It's just the sky.
Do not wish in metaphors. I cannot be more specific about that. Yep. Be specific. Yep. God damn it.
But that's why it was... sandwich. I don't want to turn into a turkey.
Yeah, that's why it was fun, though, because every ending, you're like, what's the ending going to be? But we watched them all on our YouTube channel. I played this over over and over, and Twisted Metal 2 was so good. But we will go out... Mm-hmm. With the opening song from Twisted Metal 2, which is the Los Angeles stage.
I do love that this game is set in all these different countries. And, there's Paris, but the songs not sound like Paris at all.
Oh,
it's just
dude, the
hammer
Paris,
and rock tunes
dude, the
all
Paris
over the place.
Song is like Frere Jacques with a ripping guitar solo. Actually, screw it. We're going out with that instead. It's so good. But, composers are Chuck E. Myers, Lance Linhart, Tom Hopkins, and the Pinnacle Group. For Twisted Metal 2. Such good music in this. It's so fun. We'll be back with This Week in 2006.
Hi everyone, Kent Garrison here, here to tell you about another show on the Wondery Network. Mad About Movies is your go-to podcast for all things cinema. Every week we break down movie news, movie rumors and rumblings, and our chosen movie of the week. We discuss the best of the best, the worst of the worst, and everything in between. And don't forget our world-famous weekly recommend segment, where we suggest something you should check out ASAP. So check us out on iTunes, Mad About Movies, madaboutmoviespodcast.com, until then, we'll see you at the cinema.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea. It's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week, October 28th through November 3rd, 4th, one of those things, whatever. 75 years ago this week, October 28th, 1941, John Ford's How Green Was My Valley came out. It won Best Picture of the Year, then that year's Oscars, notoriously beating Citizen Kane. I've watched it. It's fine. It's heartwarming. It's got little Roddy McDowell. He was a tiny kid, and it's about, like, Welsh coal miners or... Welsh. I think they're Welsh coal miners. It's fine. I mean, it's pretty kind of typical, like, sweet small town kind of drama, film, coming of age, whatever. I light recommend, I guess. And then 50 years ago this week, 1966, October 29th, Doctor Who regenerated for the first time 50 years ago. Also, 50 years ago, November 2nd, we got three movies. One I will not recommend because it's by Bird Eye Gordon and he makes garbage. But it has one of the best titles ever, Picture Mommy Dead. Also, November 2nd, we got The Professionals, which is a pretty good, like, late Western. Like, I love Westerns that take place at, like, the turn of the century through World War I, like The Wild Bunch. This is a lot like The Wild Bunch with Burt Lancaster, Lee Marvin, Woody Strode, Jack Palance plays a Mexican, and I don't know why it's kind of forgotten, because it's like a lot of fun if you're into like spaghetti westerns. I totally recommend The Professionals. And last but not least, we got Woody Allen's first-ish, almost kind of movie as a director, sort of, kind of, What's Up, Tiger Lily, which is extremely un-PC and very dated and kind of racist, but it's still a ton of fun, where it's just they took a Japanese James Bond knockoff and just redubbed it to be about the quest to find the perfect egg salad recipe. It's goofy. I like it. It's back when Woody Allen was still a comic and not who he is now. Anyway, that's it for this week. Stay classic.
Some days I pray for soul. Some days I just pray to the god of sex and drums and rock and roll. And maybe I'm alone.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Loaf.
Mr. Loaf.
That is Meat Loaf.
Yeah. Meat, bitch, it's loaf.
So you may want
to. Jim Steinman's kind of my hero. So, the guy who wrote all those sort of big bombastic
they're so
songs.
Good.
The producer who worked on these albums works with a band called the Protomen that we love a lot.
Yeah.
It's Protomen all about the untold story of Mega Man, practically. It's so good. Protomen, that's my lock of the week.
Yeah. Their actual first album, the Protomen, I forget what... Yeah, their first album is... Protomen's first album is 11 years old, but yeah, Act 2, Father of Death, is when they do Light Up the Night, and it goes like full Journey
full
slash
loaf.
Full Loaf. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. If some of you haven't listened to Protomen, Light Up the Night, just look at that. But out this week in 2006 was Bad Out of Hell 3.
Woo.
The Monster is Loose. This is Meatloaf's album sequel to 1993's Bad Out of Hell 2,
right.
Which is what's bringing us in,
right.
Which because no one knows any song from Bad Out of Hell 3, because everyone was like, there was a 3. But this has Objects in the Rearview May Appear
May
Closer
appear
than,
close.
Than They Are,
that song.
As well as I Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That. These songs are awesome. And the videos are 10 minutes long,
yes.
And he is
so
acting
good.
To the rafters, and it is so good. And this is another one of those things where, like, the world needs this.
Mm-hmm.
Let it exist. It's just so theatrical and
operatic.
Yeah, and
as a
teenager, I was like, "Boo hiss!" And it's like, actually, there's so much like earnest artistry going on that is like, yeah, how can you not love this? Like, it's just so.
Well, either you appreciate the earnestness,
sure.
Or the earnestness sells it to you for the camp value.
Yes, yeah.
So either way, there's something for you there.
Yeah, and then Meatloaf in general, like,
oh god,
would go on like I mean, he was in Fight Club famously, but like we've never talked about Meatloaf on the show, so I don't know what else outside of these three albums are mostly what I know him for. But like
The Apprentice, starring our president.
What?
No.
He's on The Apprentice.
He was on The Apprentice?
Oh,
Argue with Gary Busey. It's a famous clip.
Mr. Loaf, you fired.
Jack Black's dad in Tenacious D movie? No, that's a bad reference.
Yeah.
It means he acts in a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
Paradise by the Dashboard Light, honestly, is one of my favorite songs.
Because
I know how cheesy it is, and I love it.
And I love, same thing. It's so cheesy and fun, and Bad Out of Hell 2 would sell 14 million copies.
Whoa.
So, huge hit. And I remember when it came out, I was in, like, 7th grade, and it was, like, at every lame-o 7th grade dance or social function that there was, it's like, oh, yeah, it's all Meatloaf. But anyway, also out this week, El Mariel, Pitbull's second album.
Oh.
Don't recognize anything off of this, but we will hear more from Pitbull as the years go on, I'm sure. Endless Wire, The Who's first album in 24 years.
Whoa.
They had an album pre-Rock Band 2 when they played live at E3. We were there, and it was a great show.
Well, there were still three of them left at that point.
Yeah.
Or wait, what? No.
Ringo's son played the drums.
We're in 2006.
We are in 06 presently.
So I think they lost Entwistle already. So they're down to two man. But if they had Zach Starkey on drums, then they would rule. Because Ringo's son is a way better drummer than him.
Oh, yeah. It's when we saw him in 08, they were doing their whole Rock Band tour for EA.
Right.
And, they played in LA for that. But also, Playing with Fire, Kevin Federline's only album.
Oh, boy.
Remember K-Fed, everybody? No? He had an album, and it tanked. Also out, Deftones, Saturday Night Wrist. The Deftones, everybody. And then Willie Nelson's Songbird.
Yay.
This week. But that's music, 2006. Movies.
Yeah. Movies!
Last week we talked about Saw 3. Mm-hmm. It is unsurprisingly number one.
Right.
And then rounding out the movies this week is Volver with Penelope Cruz.
Volver.
Excuse me, this is America?
Pedro Almodovar. He is a fucking genius. Love that guy. I have not seen this movie, though.
I think it debuted in March, but it had a wider release this week.
Yeah. I love Almodovar. This is a good one. It's really interesting about, like, almost all his movies are about women and their relationships. Mm-hmm. And this one's about, like, women, their mothers, their past, their future, sisters, and with Penelope Cruz. That is how it's supposed to be said. We say Cruz, but it's Cruz because she's from España.
Like Reparth?
Reparth. Sí. I drive him crazy by just turning lisping everything. It's like, that's not, no, you don't say sí. I'm like, yeah, sí. Hablando en español.
Oh, this man. Santa Claus 3, Escape Clause.
Somebody made a funny observation on my Facebooks or my Twitters. That this film series has led to a generation of kids who misspell Santa Claus on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never seen any.
I saw the first one.
That's why the trailer's interesting, because most trailers don't open up by showing you everything that's happened in the previous films.
Santa Claus 3.
The first Claus.
The night on Bald Mountain.
Did not
change the face of the holidays.
It's the Santa Claus.
The second Claus proposed a challenge.
I've got to get married?
Yes, it's Mrs. Claus.
I don't think there's a woman out there that doesn't want a piece of this.
What about this third Claus?
Christmas is getting Jack.
Jack Frost, you are hereby charged with attempting to upstage Santa Claus in a manner that is both willful and malicious.
Jack Frost. Diana agrees with me on this. Martin Short is a national treasure that has never been utilized well in
the
anything.
The ghost of Martin Short, I like
but him. But he looks pretty funny in this. Martin Short is the best. I love him so much.
Is he Jack
I want to be the new Santa Claus, I must say.
Well, it's so obvious who I want to win. It's not even funny.
Yeah, they go back in time.
I love Martin Short.
Yeah, Martin Short is the best. Sadly, his talk show appearances are the finest things he's ever done. And SCTV and SNL.
Clifford's okay.
Clifford's totally fine. But, like, the idea that, like, he isn't a comedy legend on, like, a Robin Williams, Bill Murray level is a fucking travesty.
It was on Mulaney last year where it's like, that's about your level of...
I have to tell you, I found Inherent Vice kind of a hard watch. Mm-hmm. It's a slow, slow movie. Mm-hmm. But the second Martin Short walks in wearing a purple velvet suit, I was like, this should be this whole movie. Drugged up Martin Short wearing a bright purple velvet suit.
Yeah, Martin Short, baby. Just
thank you. That's all I needed.
So good.
Yeah, there's a sequel gap here of 4 years, and then the first Santa Claus was 1994.
Wow.
So, like, this is a trilogy that is spanned from 94 to 06.
It makes you feel...
It cost $12 million to make.
Wow.
And it made $110 million.
How is this not still going, then?
Yeah, I don't know why. It's like, every time you quadruple your money...
I guess Tim Allen used his escape clause.
It cost $12 million. Like, I would expect that's almost how much Tim would get.
Tim Allen is practically owned by Disney.
At least half of that went straight to him.
Oh, yeah. But I remember seeing... This is like my first holiday season in California at this point in 06 where I kind of knew at least my environs a little better, and I was actually using buses and transit. So this is my immediate image of this movie is this poster being on every bus stop.
Mm-hmm.
And like, why is Martin Short Jack Frost? I don't understand.
Yeah.
But moving through...
Another tragedy.
Flushed away the CG approximation of claymation movies.
Aardman,
with Hugh Jackman and Kate Winslet.
Let's hear a tiny piece of that trailer.
From the creators of Shrek and Madagascar.
What?
Comes the story of a pampered pet mouse.
He's hitting his nuts on everything.
And his first time out of the house.
What is this place?
It's a dapper mouse who gets flushed down the potty and lives under there with the plebes. It's flushed away. It's an Aardman Studios production, and they had signed a deal with DreamWorks. And I think at this time DreamWorks is acquired by Paramount. And these are all interesting studio stories, because only Steven Spielberg could borrow $500 million to buy back a studio. But at the time, there was... They locked them into a deal. They made Chicken Run and Wallace and Gromit. Those are very successful films, very well-reviewed films. And
oh, they're both so good.
And I have a feeling this the nature of this contract from the makers of Madagascar and Shrek. No, it isn't. From the maker of two extremely superior films that will hold up much better.
But which one made more money?
Exactly. But like that, they forced. This is a CG animated. Film from a studio known for stop motion.
Yeah, and they still have that ugly style. They have all the teeth.
I have an action figure up there from Curse of the Were-Rabbit. I love Aardman Studios' production. Wallace and Gromit is one of the most pure, beautiful things in the universe. Their style is inherently ugly, and there's no reason to adapt it into CG because part of its charm is that it's stop motion. It looks really weird. It looks like a Wallace and Gromit movie at a bad refresh rate or like 2 HD. It bombed terribly, ruined the relationship with the Paramount. I believe Aardman eventually got out of that deal. I don't know what they're doing now, but this just bumps me out because like
would you say it flushed away their relationship?
What they're doing now? They did Shaun the Sheep movie like last year.
Yes, I think they went
and they got one coming in a couple of years.
Wholly independent, and it's just all for the better. The studio's great.
The big movie out this week though. Borat.
Yan Shamash, my name is Borat. I journalist for Kazakhstan. My government sent me to USA to make a movie film. Please, you look.
I feel like people have made fun of Borat because of so many people doing the impression. It was again, we talk about successes like Crocodile Dundee. This film kind of came out of nowhere. Sacha Baron Cohen was not a known quantity in America. He had kind of been seen for the first time for in Talladega Nights that we previously talked about
earlier this year.
Yeah, well, he had the Ali G show.
He did,
but that was pretty niche.
It was in Madonna. I was obsessed.
The American Ali G show, and before that, there was the British Ali G show. I imported DVDs.
I imported, stole. Because, I was obsessed with Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah,
all of his characters, and we always love Borat more because even in his British show, he would go to America and basically make these jokes to expose racists. So at the time, my friends and I were totally obsessed with clips of Borat and learning. They announced there was a movie, and Sacha Baron Cohen's like, "Don't announce I'm doing a fucking hidden camera movie."
Yeah.
No, take that back. Like, we're not ready to talk about the deal at this stage. But this movie is so great, and I don't think anybody talks about it because the whole world saw this who's not Brett. It made so much money. It broke records for the amount of money it made per theater.
Yeah.
And it's such a small little film. But it's so good, and like Bruno's pretty good too. But it's like, it's worse than this because this made so much money. There are scenes in Bruno that cost way too much money that don't feel as authentic and prank-like. But this is just beautiful. I love Borat. I love the character. I love this film.
It is one of those things that's ruined by its fans almost. The first Austin Powers movie is charming
it's
and
great.
Adorable, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Anyone who does an impression needs to be taken out and shot.
I really wanted in the last 10 years, I've wanted a impression off where two people do Austin Powers impressions and Borat impressions until one of them dies.
This is both Austin Powers and Borat. They're staples of the guy in the office who's funny because he just imitates stuff that is funny. He doesn't actually have funny jokes.
He thinks he's the office cut-up.
They've still burned by that Halloween contest of yore. This movie
just kick in the kitchen. Nice, I like.
This movie is still great. It should be held aloft as a modern comedy classic.
Yes.
Borat was already a great character that I love, and Sacha Baron Cohen basically like this is it. Oh, we didn't give out the full title. The full title, literally for the film, is Borat: Cultural Learnings of America for Make Benefit Glorious Nation of Kazakhstan,
or parentheses, or simply Borat.
And I was watching it again, and just like I sort of wish. Due to modern sensitivity, he hadn't just picked a specific nation to be from. Because, I think he said he chose it just because who knows anything about Kazakhstan? I can affect any Eastern European racism or trope onto this country because no one knows anything about it. But it offends the people of Kazakhstan. It's probably unfair. I think this movie's still hilarious. I don't know.
It was banned in all Arab countries except Lebanon. And the Russian government discouraged Russian cinemas from showing it.
I think we know why. Because he is a Jew. Shake fist.
Running of the Jew.
You gotta shake your fist when you say that.
Hatching their Jew eggs.
Oh, yeah, so and when what happened when you are attacked by a Jew and he come with the claw?
Sacha Baron Cohen can't do this again. Ever.
Yeah,
we can never get another one. This movie is great.
I mean, he kind of did that a little bit with Bruno, but it's like...
But people were reporting. They were like, we think we saw him at an airport.
Yeah.
I bet he's making a movie.
Yeah.
And they fucked it up.
It's weird that, like, the main character from the Ally G show is the one that had the worst movie of the... Like, the least known movie of the three.
He had a fictionalized movie. And I still like Into House. I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
What I love... I love the Ally G show. Ally G is meant to poke fun at power.
Mm-hmm.
Borat is meant to poke fun at racist and old cultural... intricacies we need to get rid of, and fucking Bruno is meant to parody the fashion universe. All people who deserve to be made fun of, but Borat is still my favorite. I grew up in the racist South. I love seeing them mocked. I love him pushing their buttons. I believe the rumor is that Sacha Baron Cohen has never washed the Borat suit, so it smells like years of shoots from all over the world.
Oh God!
And he comes in real close to get those kisses. He shits in bags to offend Southern ladies. This movie is fucking fantastic.
I just wish that, like, in the 10 years since this movie, that, like, Sacha Baron Cohen should be more famous. Like, this movie and Bruno were both massive hits, and he makes interesting decisions. You know?
Yeah.
Like, Brothers Grimsby.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. And if you want to see Trump get AIDS, that's the movie you want to watch.
Nice, but
what's cool, like, Sacha Baron Cohen is, like, from, like, some real devout comedy school where he doesn't like to break character, and only for that movie was he coming around as, like, a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Sacha Baron Cohen. And no one wanted to hear about Brothers Grimsby, so look up one of his new interviews. He talks about making these movies, which he'd never done before.
Yeah.
He's like Sacha Baron Cohen isn't in this movie. Borat is. And he'd do press as Borat, and he wouldn't talk about the behind-the-scenes.
The kayfabe of the Borat. Yeah.
It's fucking beautiful like that we have a person like this,
and I wish
we utilized him more. Sacha Baron Cohen rules.
So I didn't see this because at this time in 2006, I was still flying home like every 3 months, and Halloween was always a big thing for me, and I had already booked a ticket months ahead to go home for Halloween, and this came out 10 years ago this week. And you usually do Halloween parties like the weekend before Halloween, not the week of or after. So, like, it came out and I was like gone when it happened, and then like somehow missed it when everyone else went to see it.
Came back, it was a phenomenon.
Yeah, it was like everyone, it's like, but literally everyone on earth had already seen it, and I was like, oh well. And I've just, for whatever reason, never seen a movie by myself. And I was like, well, I'm not going to start now.
I'll watch this with you right fucking now. And I want everybody to watch this
again.
We have
to record
again.
Another episode.
No, I think the big thing that surprised me is, like, I was all pumped for this because, you know, I watched the British show, I watched the American show. And at this time, I worked in an office full of, like, former sorority girls.
Mm-hmm.
And they all wanted to go see it, and they all loved it. And I was like... are you fucking kidding? I was so shocked that they would be interested in it. It's a style of humor that they would like.
Mm-hmm.
And they all came back, and they loved the parts where mostly where it's making fun of racism or where there was
homophobia.
Or there was like exceptional comedy of uneasiness, like when they're running around naked.
That blew all of
their minds.
The fucking blur, the hilariously large blur they put on over Borat's dong. Like, it hangs to his knees.
And he's chasing that fat, like, his fat assistant around.
Nude.
Like, that's
it's
a prank.
It's a hidden camera movie if
prank.
We're not being... Yeah. It's a hidden camera prank movie with a loose plot about falling in love with Pamela Anderson and stars as herself. This movie is fantastic. I really wish we talked about it more as being a great film that everyone should see. You should have seen Borat. Brett.
Yeah.
Sorry, you guys didn't all saw it all without
me. Didn't
know
you yet.
That's true. But TV this week, October 31st, Bob Barker announces that his upcoming season of Price is Right will be his last.
Oh, no.
So maybe we'll talk about it a bit more next year when it actually happens. But
they spayed and neutered him.
Yes.
Yeah, and we've talked about, like, Price is Right is great.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved how, especially even by 06, it's just like, we're not updating these sets.
Nah.
The games have remained awesome and fun, and then watching it every, like, grade school, junior high school, anytime I could be at home during a weekday, summer vacation, watching Price is Right. And then come June 2007, Drew Carey, of all people, will take over.
It's weird that's almost his 10th anniversary.
And it'll almost be his 10th anniversary of doing the show.
Yeah, but, with that announcement, a part of me, I mean, his retirement more so, like, a part of me died where it's like, I'm never going to be able to be on The Price is Right with Bob Barker.
Mm-hmm.
If I ever do it, I'm going to be on with Drew Carey, and you know what? I'm probably too old to be on. Like, I have to wait another, like, 20 years before I can...
Yeah.
You can't be in your 30s or 40s and on Price is Right.
Maybe
it seems like you're either a college kid or you're an old person.
I know a person who was just on recently. He's older than me.
Yeah,
you'll know because they interview you before you go into the show, and you kind of know absolutely you're going.
Right,
to
but
be
just
on.
Saying, like in a broad scale, watching it for 30 years, it's usually some college kid or
really?
A senior citizen. Like,
yeah, it always seemed like that to me.
Like yeah, I don't know. I guess there is a.
I mean, if unless you've got a kick-ass shirt that says "I love you, Drew." Mm-hmm. Or with some
it's like
neat
30.
Catchphrase.
It's like 30 and down, or 50 and up. If you're like 31 to 49, I feel like there's not as much of that. I don't know. It's a great show.
Not quite as monumental, but still worth talking about. November 3rd was the premiere of Class of 3000, which was a Cartoon Network show featuring Andre 3000 of Outkast. Remember Outkast people?
Of
as a school teacher, and I have the theme.
That's a great theme.
Class of 3000, sing!
So,
this is pretty sweet.
Yeah, one of the last, like...
Last Outkast songs.
And we did an episode long, long ago about vanity projects where celebrities get their own cartoons, and this seems like one of the last ones, and kind of fortuitous is that it's a person who's not really well-known anymore.
I was bummed, but this could have been misinformation that I read. Yeah. I read this in the news that this was supposed to be an Adult Swim show.
It's on Cartoon Network,
But when it came out, it was a kid show on Cartoon Network, and I was like, I'm not watching this. Yeah. I'm not watching this half-ass Magic School Bus with Andre 3000. Yeah. I wanted a dirty Adult Swim show. So I never saw it. It was bummed because I really wanted to see it.
You wanted Andre 3000 Mike Tyson Mysteries.
Ugh, fuck Mike Tyson Mysteries. I hate that show.
But I never even watched it, but just a weird time capsule of 2006 that Andre 3000 had a cartoon.
Yeah, weird. I had never heard of this.
What was Big Boy doing?
I was watching The Oblongs around this time. Where was Class of 3000? games this week, because that was actually a remarkably light TV week of TV.
Yeah. Everyone's moving out of the way of Halloween, I guess. Because in 86 and 96... You know, networks were like, whatever, it's Halloween. People are still home watching TV. I think around 2006 is when networks are like, you know what, we have to be more efficient with when we deploy new episodes. We're not putting out something the week that people are going to Halloween parties.
Yeah, so. Every night somebody's getting their trick-or-treating in or something. Yeah. Games this week, let's see, Pokemon Ranger. I had to write a preview for that at some point, I think. DS Pokemon spinoff, Death Junior Root of Evil. Where you play a little Grim Reaper and run around.
Not the first Death Junior.
No, it's the second Death Junior. And I did. I'm pretty sure I reviewed this, and I had to review it while on the road, PSP game, because I was at NOA going to Nintendo to start the review for Twilight Princess, which is about to turn 10 years old, which means the Wii is about to turn 10 years old. But I had to review that on the road. I think I gave it like 6 or 7 or something like that. It's like one of those 3D environment, 3D platformers that's like, this really would have benefited from being on a console, but it was fine, kind of an Invader Zimmy kind of aesthetic to it. But Final Fantasy 12 is 10 years old this week, and because it's a Final Fantasy numbered entry, we would like go big on this, but this is one of the two that I have not beaten. And I just could not get into it. And
well, this is when they started to like use that. It's almost like an MMO control system.
It's much more of a single player MMO where like it's not anything like FF9 or 10. You move around on this on kind of free roaming battle system, and then when you lock onto a target, like this visible line connects you with a target, and you can kind of move around and set actions and move your party around, and like. There's not quite a sphere grid from FF10. It's a license system or something where you unlock powers on a... it's some visual representation of the skills your characters would get. But just something about it didn't gel with me. It's based more on the Final Fantasy Tactics aesthetic.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just never really struck any chords with me. But I know there are fans and the soundtrack's great, but I was more into both 10 and 13.
Yeah.
To show you the gap in this, though, FF13 will not be out for 4 more years, there's a long gap.
Don't worry, then you'll get like 3 other Final Fantasy 13s in short order.
Yes, good. Killzone Liberation came out. Need for Speed Carbon, which
is
one of those...
the one they tried to put a story into?
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's happening.
Well, they created like an inner city shell around it, but they've done that already.
It was like Pro Street Carbon, but this is when Need for Speed was getting annual sequels. The Power Stone Collection for PSP, which Power Stone was a great four-player...
So put it on the system that it makes it really difficult to play four players.
I mean, if you're locally, again, you got to think Japanese development. Like, everyone is playing Monster Hunter and has a PSP and is riding trains, so a local co-op Power Stone is like, yeah, I'll play Power Stone every morning if I had the chance.
I guess we're still years away from developers realizing, oh, we can take that PS2 game, right-click to save as 1080, and then boom, it's a 360 game. Mm. Like, this would have been, Power Stone would have been great.
It would have been
consoles.
Good to have on a collection on 360, PS3, yeah. But speaking of porting games, a game that will eventually be ported to PS2 is GTA Vice City Stories, which is a spin-off / prequel to GTA Vice City, Grand Theft Auto.
Starring Phil Collins.
Well, he does have a... I guess this is a trailer.
Alas, someone who isn't the missing link.
Who's Guzman?
I'm going to give you a shotgun suppository.
That's Gary Busey.
You shut up, you stupid gorilla!
Lance Vance.
So,
I really like this game.
Yeah, so this is a precursor to Vice City, which, as you know, is set in the 80s with a full 80s soundtrack with a lot of, like, voice actors. Ray Liotta was in O2, was in Vice City, I think. And they got back Danny Trejo, Gary Busey, Philip Michael Thomas, who's Tubbs from Miami Vice.
He's Lance Vance.
He's Lance Vance.
And this actually leads right up to the first cutscene in Vice City. Like, the person who gets shot in that first cutscene is Vic Vance, who is the protagonist of this game.
Yeah.
But I like this because it's more... I don't want to say grounded, but like the hero of this game is more relatable and like more sympathetic. It's easy to be more sympathetic to this guy than most guys because, well, for one thing, you know he's dying, but also like he strikes up a romance with like the wife of like the leader of the trailer park gang, and like she's depressed and poor and she has a kid, and Vic kind of starts this relationship, and that makes it like something relatable. It's not like most GTA. Heroes who are just like unhinged dudes shooting everything, but on top of that, it's set in Vice City, which is my favorite my favorite Grand Theft Auto location, and the amazing music.
Yeah. And the music is notable in this because they're like, well, it's a PSP game, GTA, and they'd already done Liberty City Stories, and this is kind of the second handheld one. But to sweeten the pot, you heard Easy Lover in the background.
Mm-hmm. Love that song,
but that's because Phil Collins is scanned into is a character in the game as himself and has a cameo, and this is the first time a musician starred in a GTA game, maybe in a game period, like as a character playing themselves.
Playing themselves, maybe.
Who knows? But like a quick cutscene.
Hey, aren't you Phil, mate? Phil Collins.
Let's do the meet and greet another time, aye? Come on.
And then Phil Collins gets in his limo, and the audio is clearly compressed to fit on a UMD, but...
Also, love, like, the look. I'm just watching over your shoulder, and it's like, Phil Collins doing the GTA open door animation, which is, like, super overdone.
Yeah. But that's it for games. That is a lot, like, all crammed into one week. We covered, like, the DS, PSP... PS2 with FF12. Yeah. Like, there's stuff on, like, every system. And the Wii is about to launch, and the PS3. They're both mere weeks away.
I believe
we're gunning for Christmas now, right?
Yeah, yeah, big time.
And I believe you can play Vice City Stories on the Vita. It's one of those games that's compatible.
Via TV or whatever.
No, I played this, like, a couple years ago. Like, right before 5, I wanted to play through every GTA. And
that's ridiculous. Why would you do that to yourself?
Well, I want to play everyone I hadn't finished.
I've got 200 spare hours.
I did. it's still of the, you know, 3 Vice City San Andreas like mold, where it's a little bit clunky, but it's still doable.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's got a great story.
That brings us to the end of the show. You can go to, again, 302010.net. We are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. You can rate, review the show there. You can
Facebook, Wondery, LasertimePodcast.com. We love you.
And at Lasertime Show on Twitter, Brelston on Twitter for myself.
We are primarily crowdfunded, so patreon.com/lasertime is your gateway to a dickload of movie commentaries and other special delights, including a weekly show we do called Bonus Time, in the same vein of Lasertime, but less structured. But also check out Lasertime. If you like this show you're listening to now, odds are you'll like Lasertime, which is more topic-centric and not date-centric.
And this week is horror comedies.
Horror comedies. Yeah. So you wanted to talk about horror comedies for Halloween. We did horror by the numbers, trying to find the most expensive, highest grossing, highest kill count of all horror movies, who has the longest running franchise, who has the most movies, and the answer is always Jason. Almost.
And we also do regular commentaries as part of our Patreon, movie commentaries live with our community, which is always fun, and they're often tied into movies that we've talked about on this show. I kind of want to pitch Borat soon, though. I think it'll just be us going like, oh my god, what's he about to do? Kind of just like watching Jackass.
Yeah. Yep.
And there's a video game show called Video Game Apocalypse if you're interested in that sort of thing. And I am on Twitter just talking about movies, really, at Listen a Nerd.
That brings us to the final segment of the show, as always.
Oh boy.
Where we talk about...
Oh, birthdays!
Birthdays in this week of October 28th and November 3rd. Home movies again. Drake was born this week in 1986.
Oh, my Lord.
He is 30 years old. Bill Gates, Julia Roberts, Joaquin Phoenix, Dan Castellaneta, Richard Dreyfuss, Edge, the wrestler, not the guitarist. That's the Edge, right? Henry Winkler, Gavin Rossdale, Vanilla Ice. Vanilla Ice has the balls to have a birthday on Halloween.
Wow.
Which is like the coolest birthday you could have. Rob Schneider, John Candy, Nolan North, Jenny McCarthy, Anthony Kiedis, Nelly, David Schwimmer, Darren Young, a wrestler, Colin Kaepernick, Gabe Newell, Roseanne, Dolph Lundgren, Charles Brunson, Jim Cummings.
Ooh.
We mostly know for playing Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, Darkwing Duck.
In Kingdom Hearts. The Quiz, born in 1971. She won a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actress in 1993. Was in Mr. Deeds.
Winona Ryder?
Winona Ryder.
Hey!
Man, I was hoping no one would remember Mr. Deeds.
Well, it's unfortunate that I did an Adam Sandler video very recently on YouTube.com/LaserTime. If you want to see every time Adam Sandler's yelled out a product name of food, that's the video. Yep. That's
want some Cocoa Pebbles, Winona Ryder?
Want some Cinnabon? Wendy's is fucking ashy.
And someone recently reminded me on Twitter that it's the 80th anniversary of the original Mr. Deeds Goes to Town with Gary Cooper, which is awesome, and you should watch that. And you should burn all your Adam Sandler paraphernalia and beg forgiveness of this cinema gods.
But I guess it's also a 2016 tie-in for Winona Ryder is Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. Playing a mother in 82. When is the movie?
I think it's 82.
It's like 82.
It's 83.
It's early 80s. That's basically the 70s. At a time when she was in all these movies or around the same time, she would have been a very young actress. It's just a neat, like, bookend thing. But anyway, we'll go out with the title screen to Wave Race because I love it so much. It's so happy, and it couldn't be more like ridiculous Baywatch, and that synth guitar will drive you nuts. But we'll be back next week with another look at 30, 20, 10 years ago.